Hi, Carl.
Okay, we have a quorum. It's 4:01, and I'd like to bring our January 9th Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. Let's go ahead and go through roll call. Fred Ariza,
Here.
Margo Garcia,
Here.
Haley Hughes,
Here.
Doug Jennings,
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter,
Here.
Susanna Shippers,
Here.
Ryan Thomas,
Here.
and Chris Yarder here. Okay. Moving right along. Hi, Carlos. So moving right along quickly for item two, the chairperson's report. Of course, I wanted to say Happy New Year. I'm still waiting to hear from City Manager Tim. I call him, I guess everyone calls him Tim, to let me know how they're going to be handling like the boards and commissions in terms of allowing members to stay on. I would think indefinitely if they've got if we've got all this background and we've been on a committee for 8 years, it's kind of a waste to send somebody home for a year. So we're working on that. So far, I haven't been booted or anything, so we'll see. And also, I got an email from PDSD, and Ian Juan is the lead planner, and they had emailed me, and I emailed them back, but I didn't get a response. But they did want to like set up another meeting where they come to ESAC. Carlos, I don't know if you've heard from them at all, have you? Okay. So he knew that Margot and I have been bugging PDSD pretty good for Plan Tucson. So they just wanted to like come to one of our meetings and see what we're doing. So if hopefully he'll get back to me and we can put him on the agenda for next month. All right. So that's all the news for me. Let's go to item three. And Carlos, you're up for the neighborhood recycling centers.
Good afternoon. I know some of you requested really an update on what's been going on with the neighborhood recycling centers, more specifically the Ward 4 closure and the Ward 6 situation. So this has been pretty much, as we all know, NRCs continue to be a problem for the city in terms of really not being big enough or adequate enough really to receive all the material that folks bring into those recycling centers. So there's specific capacity really just to load up essentially the dumpsters that are there. And we try to service them as much as we can, but sometimes they're overloaded. And when they're overloaded, folks, instead of really taking the cardboard back or coming back at a different time, that material essentially is placed right next to it. And that's good recyclables, but a lot of times it other folks really use that those areas for illegal dumping as well. As you all know, those centers are located close to ward offices. Ward offices staff and park staff try to essentially do their best really to tell us when a site needs to be cleaned up, when needs to be monitored, when needs to be serviced. And when they've seen folks out there that maybe they could do something a little bit different, obviously folks don't react very well to that, and so they had not very good encounters with folks that are trying to use the neighborhood recycling centers where they're not really, I would say, in the best optimal position really to be able to do that or have room. So the request was really from city manager's office is can we for the moment for the time is can we close down the Ward 6 the Ward 4 neighborhood recycling center? Let's transfer essentially that site and redirect the public to use the site at Los Reales. And that's essentially what has been occurring for this past week, and we're in transition of doing that. You saw probably over the holidays some situation that was occurring at the Ward 6 area. That essentially and we all know that during the holidays, obviously that's a peak use for those neighborhood recycling centers, but certainly they tend to be overloaded. You all know also as well that those sites are limited in space. So even if we had the ability to deploy additional dumpsters for additional room, we don't have the ability really within those areas really to service those dumpsters. So it really has come to our attention that we just can't continue to do business in the as-is condition. One, it's really it's it, it detracts really from the facilities that they're essentially are co-located. One of them, especially the Ward 6 area, we don't have a formal agreement really to be in that particular area. And so that's the other thing. And it really just continues to be a constant maintenance to continue to really service those and because recycling centers. And instead of really being seen as a positive thing, and people do, unfortunately, the folks that really enjoy them want to use them, they get the short of the stick and saying, well, the folks that are not really using it properly, that service may be discontinued because of that. So our approach is really we got to look at that. We got to collapse essentially the way we have been providing that service. Can we provide that same service in a different mode or a different capacity? So what we're evaluating is just a few options out there that just are coming to our mind at this point in time. One, can we maybe potentially, and obviously this needs to be vetted through you, vetted through the council, get their support and relief on that is should we maybe do away with the current facilities the way they are, and maybe establish specific hours where that facility is either open or available, so that way it would be open and manned, so that way there's a little bit more monitoring on that, and more of a clear oversight of what that is, and ensuring that we collect all the items during the specific period of time when the facility is open, so that way we don't really get to leave it open all the time. It will be on a schedule, and essentially will be serviced that day. And it will be cleaned up that day, and so, but it would open at a different time, or available for service at a different time. So that is really one of the options. Just keeping them at the current location, and just providing for specific hours of service, and but obviously they would be manned. The other option would be is we do away essentially. We no longer. Essentially, leave the dumpsters in place. What we would do is we would still utilize that area or those areas or identify potential other sites where our folks will be essentially there with a truck and will be essentially receiving the material as it comes in. Very similar in nature to how we do HHW services, but doing it in such a way that is the schedule would be somewhat of an alternating schedule. Some of it could be done in the morning, some of it could be done in the afternoon, and some of it would essentially would be open for probably a period of anywhere between 3 to 4 hours at any given time, and would be available so that way folks can that's convenient for them during a day of the week, in the morning, in the afternoon, or even on the weekend, and essentially have that service available. But yet we would deploy the trucks, we will collect the materials, haul it away at the end of that period. And then essentially not continue on the as-is basis. So those are for the moment, those are the things we're looking, what is the logistics. One of the things that we're probably going to do initially is as part of our, and to give it a test, is as part of our HHW events, one of the things we're also contemplating is can we add to those HHW events the collection of recyclable materials, knowing that every month We're at a location near this it throughout the city. So those are the three preliminary options that we're looking at that right now. Obviously, we need to find out what is it that we need from a logistic perspective. What is it that we need to do really to make sure that we try to provide as much coverage as we can during essentially the week, and really not seen as a reduction in service. We know that we all know that every single residential customer in the city of Tucson has the ability to have at least one recycling bin. And if they request two or three more bins, then certainly that those bins are available for free. And that is part of the service that is provided through the residential fee. But we also know that a lot of customers that come in and use those neighborhood recycling facilities is folks that they probably purchase a big piece of furniture, refrigerator or a washer, and they need to dispose of that essentially of that special cardboard. We know that is the case, so it's applicable for regular customers. But we also see the need really for how can we deploy recycling services to multifamily housing, okay? And also really to the businesses. Both of those functions, multifamily housing and businesses, they have the ability on their own really to contract the services for recycling services. But because it's not mandated, they choose not to essentially provide that service because that will be an additional cost that they either have to pay the city or have to pay the third party hauler. In this case, could be Republic Services, could be Waste Management, could be Waste Connections. And so that's why, because it's not mandated, they don't have the willingness really to pay for that service. Some of them do, some of them don't. And then we all know that a lot of our county residents use essentially those neighborhood recycling centers because recycling is not mandated in any of the cities, nor in unincorporated Pima County. So we know we have that excess material that comes in and being essentially generated at the neighborhood recycling centers. So to provide some sort of an incentive to not only multifamily housing folks or businesses that have refuse services with the city, one of the possibilities is we know that we have a cost to service those recycling centers, not only in the cost of hauling, picking, but also the cost of really cleaning up those sites. Can we shift some of that cost and provide some sort of an incentive for businesses that are within the city limits, that are city customers, and multifamily housing that also we provide refuse services that we can probably establish a cap on a yearly basis that we can subsidize the recycling services to those businesses? So it almost becomes to be a grant, very similar in nature to what water does with the incentives for if you go and purchase a low water use toilet, if you go and use a low water washer, there are incentives that could be provided. So we're looking at that. Can we provide that incentive and that offset to those customers so that way those businesses or those multifamily complexes that we service, could they reapply on a yearly basis for a reduced portion of us providing that recycling service to them? So again, those are all the alternatives that we're trying to put together so that we create in a cafeteria menu to see how we can essentially transition from the current service to the proposed service. And obviously we need to go have some outreach, have some participation, some feedback on that. But those are the ideas or the concepts that we're trying to develop as we move forward. And again, it's really an anticipation of or it, as a result of we don't believe that we can basically keep doing the same thing over and over, trying to achieve different results. I don't think we're going to get there. I think we're doing a disservice really to the customers, to the area residents, and really to the customers that really want to do the right thing. And yet, they tend to get the short end of the stick for folks that really don't want to follow the rules. So that's the update. And I think there is really interest from the Ward 6 that if it gets to be very out of hand, then they would be in a similar position that they may not want to continue to have essentially that recycling center next to their facility. So that's my report, and so again, it's very preliminary, but very those are the ideas. And so if you have other ideas that are concepts, we'll be more than happy really to review them and discuss them and explore those options.
Any questions for Carlos? Margo?
Okay, questions and comments. First of all, the problem with what you're suggesting is that two of the items are supposedly not being picked up by the city. So what are we supposed to do with our orange bags and our glass? One would be to change the glass policy and allow it back into the recycling, which a lot of people are already doing. But the orange bags is a bigger issue. And I can see it, only the orange bags being in that position, for instance. And I don't know quite where all the cardboard comes from. I had for a long time suspected that it was coming from people carrying in their boxes of glass, but that probably is not true. The last time I was at Ward 6, it was absolutely neat as a pin. Everything was picked up. People were being extremely careful. I talked to a gentleman who had cardboard that couldn't fit into the containers. I know you said there's no room. I find it hard in Ward 6. It may be the requirements of the trucks to back in and pick up those containers and back out again that I don't understand totally why there isn't more room for them, because those cardboard containing units have been filling up for years, far long before anything else was really full, and it seemed like there would be plenty of space to put in more of those. The other was, if you're going to do this sort of intermediate step where you're trying to direct people to others, you have to give them much more information. The gentleman said it says to go to Los Reales landfill. I haven't a clue where that is. So there were no information about what the addresses were. No map where they were. There was nothing. It just said go to Los Reales. Now we all know where that is, but the average person hasn't any idea where it is. So and or go to another, if there's another facility that's open, if you go, I mean, I can see you have it open only certain hours. I would say that out of the list of things you put down, that probably was the closest to one that I could see is workable, as long as you rotate the places and the times. But then you would have to have posted, if this site is closed and it's Monday morning from 10 to noon or 10 to 2, you can go to Ward 2 and this is the address. Or if it's Wednesday, you can go here and this is the address during these hours. So you'd have to have very large, explicit information on what the alternatives are for people, because this gentleman with the cardboard did not want to go home with the cardboard. He was very anxious to do the right thing. He understood that it was full and that he couldn't just leave it on the ground. He was being very careful about that. But he was at a loss. And so when that happens, it was giving really bad vibes, bad feelings about how he could comply the requests that were made of him, and he was willing to comply. He just didn't have enough information to know how to do it. So I tried to tell him where Los Reales was, and of course it was quite a distance and he wasn't terribly keen on doing that, but that's one of the things I think is a problem with, okay, so I get another blue bin, but I can't put my glass and I can't put my orange container in there. What am I supposed to do? I can fill it with cardboard. I personally don't get very much cardboard, but I guess people do. So I think that that those two issues are the big ones for me that would need to be solved before moving to others. And I don't know if the person is here from Sivano, but I have heard from, I mentioned to Brittany and to Chris, that there's a group at Sivano where there was a women's coffee group where they were collecting the orange bags, and then one of them was taking them to one of the sites, primarily for. And they were wondering if they couldn't get a small orange bin in Sevano, maybe at the community garden or one of the other places where there's a discrete neighborhood that's really working on these issues together. And they would love to do that. And they would also, the composting, they would like you to again approach maybe the nursery. And now that it's a locked container and it doesn't have to be monitored by the nursery itself, maybe it could, people would go there because now people are putting the stuff in their freezer. I mean, this is a little bit off the topic, putting the stuff in their freezer and waiting till someone can take a load of it down to the closest composting collection site. So it's again this issue of the collections with people who are really very committed to working on our planetary condition and want to cooperate and are willing to go to extra grounds. I would say putting compost in my freezer is a level to which I'm not willing to go to, but there are some people who are in fact doing that in order to participate in these programs, which they think are important. So that would be my comments. I'm sorry that this hasn't come to this group ahead of time for discussion. I mean, seeing it on the front of the newspaper, the story, and having it closed, Nikki Lee's, Council Member Lee's newsletter finally did some explanation about it. But it wasn't, other than if you didn't get her newsletter, you didn't understand what the context of it was at all. Now, you're not writing the newspaper stories. I know you can't control that, but it was not very well handled from a publicity point of view.
So, Ms. Margo, yes, the orange bag issue needs to be worked out. We concur with you. We understand that, and I think the same issue is we're having in terms of the drop-off locations for glass, on how they're being picked up, how they're being serviced, and really the debris that is left behind that. So the focus right now is really looking at the NRCs, but the glass drop-off locations continue to be an issue. I think really, when you look at putting it on the bin, seems a right approach. But when we look at what does that glass look like at the end of the day when it's processed through the recycling facility, it's no comparison really from a reuse perspective in terms of what we're essentially seeing of what we collect. So there's so I from a circularity from a reuse perspective, the drop of the glass drop off is a much, much better solution from a reuse perspective than just putting it on, in the blue bin. And then also from a cost perspective, that's also something that needs to be looked at. So what is the possible solution on the glass is and again, drop offs sound great. They in principle look they in theory should work fine, but in practice there's a lot of complexities, a lot of issues that we need to deal and contend with. And so very similar nature, we got to look at what do we do with the glass, not put it in the blue bin, but really create a different way of how do we collect it and how do we continue to really to provide the boutique service that folks want and has been very well received and really there is a very good circularity example on how the glass is collected and how the glass is being used as compared to going back to put it into the blue bin. That may be what we may end up doing, but I think really from a reuse perspective, contamination perspective, the way it's that we handle it today, it's probably is the most optimum, with the exception of how do we collect it and how do we service those glass drop-off areas.
How about smaller units at grocery stores? I mean, the size of the cardboard container is quite a small unit. I mean, it's about the same size as what people have, businesses have for their own collection of garbage, and multifamily units have those things with the two, black flop-ups. It's about the same dimensions. Would grocery stores take a smaller one of that? Because that's sort of as part of the of people's patterns of going to the store Maybe not every store would take them, but it might be even seen as an incentive to go to a particular store if it has a glass drop-off, and only the glass. Or, the orange bag is a whole other issue, but certainly the glass alone would make it a nice circularity. Or maybe a liquor store, since a lot of the, well, not my glass or wine bottles, but I don't know about the rest of you. Other than applesauce, not much else glass gets used in our household.
Yes.
Carlos, how many NRCs are left right now? Is there like a half a dozen or how many?
Doug, is it, right now, including Los Reales, are five locations.
Five locations.
I did want to mention that I'm still seeing people rebelling against the orange bags. And that shows up too, in the paper. People are still complaining about it. And I can't remember where there was that one picture where, there's a big plastic patio chair. And, so people want to, have a place to put their big stuff. And it probably doesn't, fit in their recycle bin. So anyhow, I guess that still has to be, just a constant reminder for people. And they all know they can't leave tires, but people still leave tires. I just don't,
Well,
that's just plain laziness. So,
I disagree. I think it's a communication issue. I think people want to do the right thing. They just don't know where to do it. Now, with this new approach to brush and bulky, where you can call in and have them pick up your things at that time, it might be that people will then know to put tires there at that particular time, that that's one of the things, a certain number of tires will be taken. But I mean, that picture of the chair just said to me, where are you supposed to take a plastic chair? If I had a plastic chair to throw away, where would I throw it? What should you do with it, Carlos?
So most of the time those chairs are broken, and so you would essentially you would throw it in the trash bin.
So it should go in the trash. It's not recyclable on the blue bin.
No, because essentially that falls out of the parameters of really it of what we recycle. So that's recycling. Yes, it has a plastic container, okay, but it has plastic, but it's not something that could be really essentially processed at the recycling facility. As soon as he shows him the recycling facility, will be pulled off to the side because he cannot really be processed. That's a reject material. So that's how he would traditionally be handled. Yeah, some people I would say yes, it's got plastic. I'm gonna break it apart, put it into the recycling bin. It fits in there. Once it gets to the facility, most likely will be it's a big item, and it would be essentially be taken away the line because it's not really a plastic container or a beverage container, and that's really it's not a container. Okay, it's not a 5 gallon bucket. It's not a laundry detergent container. It's not a yogurt tub. So he would be rejected anyway. So the safest way is really to put it into your trash bin.
So then we need to change the messaging is not that we recycle plastic, we recycle plastic containers. So we need to add the word containers to the messaging so that it's clearer. Is that what you're telling me?
So that's what we try to simplify. So over the years, we've been trying to simplify the messaging in terms of it all goes back that we all think the recycling is universal. Recycling is not universal. And so one of the other things, what could be recycled in LA cannot be recycled in Tucson. What's recycled in Tucson cannot be recycled in Phoenix or in Las Vegas. Every single program is a little bit different. Each facility is a little bit different. So the way we wanted to do that approach here very simplistically is let's focus on four different items: cardboard, the paper, essentially the aluminum containers or the metal containers, and any plastic containers. Okay, and if you do that, if we focus on those, we're doing a huge job on really cutting back on contamination and re really recycling the products that could be that could be not, well, probably, and I'll use this word, could be reused, because I think part of the semantics is, and that's what the expectation is, if I put in a water bottle into my recycling bin, because I'm recycling it, I'm expecting that that same water bottle is going to turn into another water bottle. And most of the time, it isn't. Okay, most of the time, that water bottle turns into your shampoo bottle. Okay, and your shampoo bottle turns into a 5 gallon bucket container. So it's reused, but it's not fully recycled. And I think that's part of the messaging that we need to change is yes, you're reusing that container or that plastic container, but you're not really truly recycling it to another water bottle. Okay, and I think that's where we lose the semantics and the messaging. And that's what people don't believe, could potentially not believe in recycling, because we don't see a one-to-one exchange for what we put into the bin. Okay. That ultimately that product is reused and it's put into a different container. Yes.
So,
Sure.
Marco, just a couple of things. I wanted to join the meeting because I knew you were going to
Hi,
be
Christina.
discussing this.
Hi,
Hi.
Christina.
The flyer does say on plastics, bottles, jugs, and containers. We've tried to be really clear, and we also say numbers 1s, 2s, and 5s because there are some people that really want that very specific information. Well, what about the numbers? We had tried to move away from the numbers so that we just tell people containers, but we still get a lot of people that they want to look at the number on the in within the arrow. So we've changed everything to address that. But one of the other things that you said you think people are trying to do the right thing. In some cases, I don't agree with that because at Ward 4, it took a lot for them to make the decision to do this. And, they shared with me stories of people coming up and with a truck bed full of cardboard who just swept it off the back of the truck and made no attempt to put it in the bins. And when they would try to ask the people to do it, they were, called names and told to mind their own business. And, this is the staff. And people get very confrontational, and certainly Ernesto has had that happen to him when he's been out there. And Alyssa has, when she goes and does checks and she offers people orange bags, and they, are very rude to her as well. So I don't know that it's everybody's trying to do the right thing. I think there's a lot of people who are, but I think there's a lot of people who, they are just looking for some place to, get rid of stuff.
But why would they make a special trip to a neighborhood recycling center with cardboard if they really didn't want to see that cardboard reused? I mean, they could have stuffed it in anybody's container, trash container.
I don't know. I can't tell you that. I think that they are, maybe it's what I'm hearing is that it's people from businesses.
Small businesses.
And so it could be that somebody from a business is being told by their manager or the owner, take it to the recycling center, but they don't want to have to stand there and empty everything and put it in a bin. And this is the easiest way for them to do that. We certainly see that with people who hire haulers to take debris from their homes and they don't want to go to the landfill and pay the fee, so they dump it
Sure.
in the desert. We see this stuff all the time. And, and Ward 4, it took a really long time for them to come to this decision. It was not made in haste at all, so
But then
they just had reached the point where they just didn't feel there was anything more we could do.
But then it needed to be communicated to the community as a whole. Ward 4 is closing because of these problems, and we're trying to figure out new systems to get around them. So rather than have people drive up with the expectation that they were going to deal with this issue,
They actually
instead
had
they're just shown
wait.
a closed door that says, sorry, it's closed, bye.
Well, the
So
signs
go to
were
Los
up for
Reales. Who's Los Reales?
more than a month.
Really?
Yes.
All right. And what did the signs say? That we're going to close this because you guys are being schlops?
Yeah, basically that
Basically.
we're going to be closing because people are, abusing
Using
and
it.
leaving materials on the ground and not breaking up the cardboard and all of these things.
So if Ward 6 is closed, are you going to not, I mean, if it's kept clean, are you not going to close it, or are you going to close it anyway?
Some embargo not with
That decision has
That
not been
decision
made.
has not been made, and I think, quite frankly, we rely heavily on the ward office really to guide us on that, and in terms of really reacting to the preference, and that's how we've done it. But if it was really up to the department, we would be looking at closing those facilities because it's not really providing a service to the community the way it's intended, and it's really creating a significant nuisance. To the surrounding neighborhood. We understand there's a need really to provide alternative recycling, but in lieu of those centers, but just looking in the assets condition, it's yeah. If everybody were to do the right thing and do and follow the rules and use common sense and not, we wouldn't be having the discussion, and those centers will be ultimately used, and we wouldn't be having the discussion at all, but that's not the case. And we always develop the programs really for people that would follow the rules. And unfortunately, there's a lot of us that we don't follow the rules. And it's what is our convenience, and how do we get rid of the stuff? And if the example used on the truck is they think they're doing the right thing by going out there, but the real thing is that they need to either put it in the dumpster or really go to Los Reales and get it. Either process or sell it to Freedman or get it recycled at another recycling facility. So there are alternatives, but the easy alternatives would be is if I know of an area, nobody's watching, I don't pay anything. Well, what am I going to do? Go to Los Reales or go to a place that immediately I pull up, dump all my stuff, walk away, nobody's going to catch me. That's probably, unfortunately, that's what it is. And there is no, and that's something that the Ward 4 council office taking a position is I really would like to continue to provide the service, but folks are not adhering to that, and so we need to look at ways on how we bring the center back under certain conditions, under certain technology and enforcement on that, to be able to make sure that folks that are not using it correctly, then we prove to them there's a reason why we give it a try, and essentially it's not working, and we're going to do it again.
So, are you seriously looking into what Nikki Lee suggested? All the cameras and checking people's license plates as they come in, or what are you thinking about?
So on that is the deployment of that technology. I think we can deploy cameras. We can deploy systems out there really to monitor that. But at the end of the day, it's going to require somebody else really to make the enforcement. I don't think we can do that ourselves. It has to be with the help of the city attorney's office and maybe the Tucson Police Department to be able to be in a position to issue those citations. Because even from a code perspective, I think we may be able to, but I think we're going to be limited once those citations are issued. How do they essentially go through the court system, and how do they prevail into the court system? So the concept is there, but the implementation, that's where I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to be worked out. And we need to be able to have the right support to be able to get us to that level and be able to provide that service.
Well, I agree. I mean, this is the same problem as the red light running, that people just continue to run the red lights time and time again, even when there's, rules about it. And so if we're going to be serious about this, then we need to invest in the police or the community service officers or whoever it is that's going to look at all of those look at all those tapes that are coming through the different license plates to work on it. So, I mean, there is going to be a cost involved into it, but a lot of us who want to be able to have those services, are pretty upset that they're going to be removed because there's some bad actors. I mean, it's like, I don't know, is there a parallel to people entering houses and stealing stuff just because they want your stuff instead of somebody else's?
Well, you've had to do that at the parks and stuff. A lot of the extra dumpsters have been pulled. So, Carlos, what I was kind of wondering about, and it kind of bothers me now, especially since the city council members have gotten such huge raises, but so the council office is closed, at 2 o'clock. And so if there was somebody that could be at the office at least until 5, I would think that would be something that the council members should be thinking about. And then have a set time where the stuff is dropped off, is locked up at a certain time. 6 o'clock or something.
So I think just my 2 cents of that, I think it would be difficult to just to leave the I would say keep the doors open till 5 o'clock, whatever the amount is or whatever the time frame is. I think is you cannot attend really because the offices are open. Public can come in at any time until the offices are closed. So it's very difficult, I would imagine, for them to monitor the office and really monitor essentially the recycling center at the same time. So I think we would see the responsibility in terms of monitoring the recycling side, something that we would oversee, something that we're responsible for, and not really rely on the council offices really to monitor that. That really is our responsibility, and that's something that we would essentially take on and be responsible for that.
Okay, I was just thinking that people would think that if there were people there, that
Or television,
they
if
would
they watching.
behave better, I mean, if they know nobody's there, they're just gonna dump stuff, so.
Well, it's been my experience, like at the Ward 4 office and also at the Ward 2 office, they're not near anything. They're not really near the building, even though at the Ward 2 office is right behind the building, but that most of that building is abandoned right now. There's nobody occupying those buildings, and so the ward offices are in the front of the building. The recycling centers are in the back, and there's nobody there to monitor them. And I don't think the ward office have the staffing to monitor people coming in and out of there because there's at least two different access points at Ward 2. There's only one at Ward 4, and it's a big parking lot. You've got people coming in and out, and so people might be driving into the place for other reasons other than going to the recycling centers. It's going to be hard to keep monitoring everybody who has access to those places, and it's going to require too many people to spend too much time monitoring, or just a small, maybe what could be a small number of people who are actually doing these things where they're just dropping off stuff. And just toss them everywhere, that like Carlos has been saying. And as far as the police are concerned, they got too much to do already, and they are grossly understaffed. And so,
Yeah,
you know,
you
if
didn't need new people.
yeah, and you know, who wants to be the garbage police?
I
It's
don't
going to
know.
be
Some
it.
people might.
Well, maybe it would require some volunteers in that respect.
Well, we talked about that, trying to get some volunteers at one of these centers, and that when I went to six, there was a table there with some people who were engaging folks and doing education and talking about what went where and helping people, to sort through and keeping the non-orange bags out of the plastics containers. So there have had
Well,
some.
unless you can come up with something like having cameras available or on site to give the people the impression that whoever's going in and out of there are being monitored, whether they actually are or not, that would be something else.
Just put a fake one up and say smile.
Well, that sometimes that might
Yeah,
work.
no.
But it's a difficult path to go on because then I don't think it would be disingenuous for us to say that you're being monitored when you're really not.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that, but you certainly put up cameras and.
I'm a little curious. How much volume are we talking about? How many tons are the NRCs collecting a week or a month, Carlos? Do we know that number?
So, Doug, I don't know if we have the specific number. I think we can estimate that because we essentially include the servicing of those NRCs with other sites that other commercial customers. So I don't think we have it specifically for that. I think we can estimate that and have those numbers worked out. But in terms of, and sometimes it is a dedicated route and we may be able to pull that information. Sometimes we commingle it with other ones. So I don't have the number in front of me, but we can certainly dig it into it and see if we look at it. The other thing on that is it sometimes and it's hit and miss and it varies. The contamination of those NRCs is sometimes is greater than the 25, 30% that we see. So it's also is not so much the volume, but also the contamination that we essentially collect. So when you look at that ratio, the tonnage, just the cost of doing that, then it's really significantly higher than your
That's
traditional.
a good point. You'd have to audit the material to find out what you're collecting. It might be 50% trash, but if you're at 2% cardboard and 3% containers, you're doing all this work for
Nothing.
a few tons of recyclables and 30 tons of trash.
And that's something we're going to be looking at that as part of our analysis, is looking at that, the feasibility of that of really what we collect and how much is actually truly a recyclable material.
There you go. Yeah,
Well,
I agree.
I mean, if you go to six, the cardboard looks like there's only cardboard in there. I must say I haven't pawed through it to look at it in that detail. And certainly the glass, I think, doesn't have much else in it. The plastic may be an iffier because it's in bags. But I would be surprised if it, I mean, I'm sure there is some contamination. I'm not going to deny that there isn't some contamination, but I would think it would be no much, not much different from the contamination that comes out in the blue barrels. I guess the other way is to go to the root cause of it, is to look at if it's really businesses. I think your idea of giving some options to the businesses, to giving them incentives. And I thought we had that to begin with, that if you took on recycling, we came to businesses, we used to go to businesses and do an audit with them and talk about what could go to recycling and what couldn't. And the recycling bins were less expensive than the trash. So to the extent they could recycle, they could diminish the amount of trash that they put out, and therefore, that cost was lessened. Has that program totally disappeared, or what's happening to that, Carlos?
So it's not that it has disappeared. What we have seen lately is there's a lot of interest in of really commercial customers joining the city for the city to provide that service. So that has been really the focus of, is really trying to attend to those customers and their needs that we have lost the focus on really I would say incentivizing that program and really putting a focus on the program. But it does happen when we interact with them. We mention it to them. Hey, we're selling the services that service is available. But again, most folks would be able to say that and again, it's really from their end, it's really purely a business decision to say, do I want to spend the extra time and effort really to put in all the stuff in the recycle bin as compared to my regular trash bin. So even though there's half of the cost, it's still really for some businesses, that is not enough incentive to be able to do that.
But it would seem to me, let's see if I get, it would seem to me that it depends again on the businesses. So I guess if I were approaching it, I would say, well, let's look at restaurants. We know that, that what kind of a lot of their stuff is food waste, so that goes in a different, but the glass, and then probably they don't have much paper. But if I go to an insurance company that's running, I would think I would have mostly paper, and so that might be one that's really worthwhile to look at. in terms of recycling. So it seems to me we have to really, break it down and, not just talk about generic business because they're also very different, and see what the pitch is to those specific kinds of businesses and pick the low-hanging fruit. Like an insurance company, it seems to me that other than the aluminum cans that they have in their little cooler so that they can drink something, or some bottles, that they're primarily papers. So if I were an insurance company, I would think I would want mostly to buy the recycling because most 75%, I'm guessing, would be paper and would be cheaper to do that. Have you taken that approach to this issue?
So the reason that we haven't really looked at that individually is how do we service the recycling customers? And again, we typically service them with either front load customers. We don't have a dedicated, I would say, route for commercial customers with APCs. So in all honesty, we have not really taken that approach. We've been really focused on just ensuring what we it's hard sometimes really to provide the services in the as-is condition. Though it really we haven't really explored more options in terms of how do we expand those services as we move forward. So obviously we need to do that, but we just haven't gotten to that point, to that level.
If it's cardboard, what who's providing all the cardboard? Is that, I mean, is that grocery stores we know bale their own? If you go out in the back behind a Walgreens or a grocery store and so forth, they have all their own baled cardboard, so they're not the ones. Who's dumping the cardboard? Huh?
Amazon.
Well, I know it's Amazon, but who's buying all the Amazon that's coming into these places?
Carlos, I have a question too. I'm assuming that this is not a phenomenon that only occurs in Tucson. What are other cities trying to do to kind of resolve that same the same problem we're having?
They don't provide the service because they know they're challenging on drop-offs. They don't have drop-off locations. So those drop-offs are pretty much smaller cities that don't have recycling services, and they do provide some sort of drop-off really to provide a recycling service. So most municipalities, more bigger cities, they don't provide drop-offs. They don't provide the services that we're currently providing. So we're unique on that perspective. And the reason for that is really because again, the approach you're taking is residential customers who pay for the service have already a recycling bin. Customers, the commercial customers that have the ability, you want to do the right thing, you can contract the services really to be able to do that. And the same thing goes with multifamily residents. So that's why when we peel the onion and you look at what is the reality of the recycling program, it's only paid by residential customers, and that service is already being provided to the residential customers. Yes, there are customers that don't have the service, multifamily housing and commercial customers, but they have the ability within their business to be able to contract and provide that service to their customers. They opt not to do that because that is not mandatory. But in terms of other cities providing the service, they don't because they base it on a cost of service and they base it on the fact that who's paying for the service is residential customers. And there's why should residential customers be subsidizing multifamily housing and commercial customers? So that's why they've done away with that, especially because of really the cost to maintain that and to service that, and ultimately the materials that are collected, very minimal return on that investment and that service being provided.
So is the MRF not interested in collecting the orange hefty bags? Because, we had talked about eventually putting those into the blue bins.
Right. So to the moment, they're not interested in really
They're not
processing those.
interested.
Right.
Okay. So it's a little tough to put it on the renters that they're supposed to organize and demand that their landlords have recycling. I mean, that there's to me, there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
Well, and most of the landlords are out of Arizona,
Sure.
so most of them are hiding behind LLCs in different states and stuff. So it's
Other
a
than HSL, that's
yeah.
local.
So it's a real yeah. So it's a real problem. Most of my neighborhood is 74% rental, and most of them are landlords are out of state. So
Ms. Barber, could be a policy decision from the city's council to be able to say we want to mandate recycling in multifamily housing, we want for so many units and above. The same thing they could do in commercial businesses. But we all know that maybe once the city enacts essentially the legislation at the state legislation, that the next session they're going to come back and revert that. So those are some of the things that in other areas, okay, other states, they have specific mandates that essentially that make multifamily housing and businesses participating to some sort of a diversion and recycling program. For Arizona, we're not there yet.
Well, we probably should move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a good discussion.
Thank you,
So,
Carla.
yeah, thank you. Item four, Maggie, we're finally getting to the financial monthly report. So you're up.
Oh, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to share my screen. Brittany, can you allow me to share my screen, please?
Yes, give me one sec.
Sure.
All right, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Can you see my screen? Everyone can see okay?
We're good. Maybe a
Great.
little bigger. No, I guess we can if
I
we
can make it bigger. Yeah.
okay.
Yeah, I can't see it that well.
Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. This is data as of December 31st. We have collected $36.2 million in revenues in Fund 502 in our ES funds. And our forecast went up a little bit only because I think our investment earnings are going to be higher than I had thought last month this year. I could be wrong. We'll see how we get when we get to the end of the year. Of course, the investment earnings are the interest that is collected on the fund balance for this fund. So, as we draw down the fund balance, we earn less interest, and it varies from month to month. But generally speaking, our cash balance is over about $50 million at least at any given time. So this came up a little bit, but that's really the only substantial change. Just as a reminder on the transfer in, we are planning to have a $1 million transfer in from the general fund to help support the construction of the Bifusion building. And then we have a transfer out to the Department of Transportation to their general fund. A smaller, it's just about $120,000 a year, and that's the groundwater. And that's where I misspoke last month, Ms. Garcia, about which fund. I've said HERF just because that's what comes to my mind when I think of transportation, but it's really transportation's general fund, and to recognize their contribution to their cleanup efforts that they do for groundwater. So, that's our revenues, our expenditures. Employees received in December a one-time payment. Employees who were, I believe, full-time employees as of December 1st of 2023 received a one-time payment of $1,000, and then part-time employees got a $500 payment. So that is reflected in the wages. That was just one time in lieu of another ongoing adjustment to city employees' salaries that happened at the beginning of the fiscal year. We've expended $25.8 million as of December 31st. And I think we'll be around $70 million at the end of the fiscal year. One thing on the capital outlay, that's our vehicles. We are still, we just, even since I gathered this data a week and a half, 10 days ago, we've received quite a few more vehicles. We have a lot of vehicles on order, even going back over a year, and we're going to receive quite a few vehicles, hopefully by the end of June. That's the plan, according to the fleet administrator. So that those are the changes from last time. Any question here at the fund level for the committee, from the committee? Nope. Okay. Then we can move on to the program. Let me make this bigger.
Can you just sometimes point to the number?
Sure, sure. Be glad to.
Like kind of like where you're at and stuff. Because
sure. Can you see that when I move my cursor, does that make a pointer?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a pointer. It's a bar. But,
yes. Okay.
That would help me.
Okay. So here's the $25.8 million that we expended in the fund. Our biggest spenders, of course, are commercial collections and then administration. And what posts here is the central service cost allocation posts here, which is the charges from the supported services like HR and payroll, things like that, to the Environmental Services Fund. And also we pay every month, we make a payment to Tucson Water for the support that they provide to the fund associated with the Navline billings and customer service, things like that. We have not paid the IGA yet to Tucson Clean and Beautiful, and we're just getting ready to make the payment for the IGA with compost cats. And Trevor, maybe someone is going to reach out to you so we can get the check to the right place, because the U of A is a big organization and we want to make sure we don't just mail it anywhere. So I know Lisa's going to reach out to you on that. And then Los Reales, of course, and residential collections are our biggest spenders. And nothing really, no big changes from last period to point out to you, except for what we talked about on the previous screen. And any questions related to, at the program level from anyone on the committee? No?
No one.
Okay. Okay, I'll stop sharing.
You know, I did want to just ask the committee quickly, you know, if we should have a finance meeting. Any ideas on that? Do you think it's something that we need to do now, or
how far along is the new budget?
So the budget, just the operational budget, will be due, the request, and this is the very preliminary request. It will be due at the end of this month. So right now it is really in its infancy stage. And okay. I think if, well, we can meet anytime, but I think meeting once we have a nice draft budget for you to look at would be really, I think that would give you a lot of information, because we could compare what we're seeing from this year's expenditures, this year's budget, then we can look at the request. I'm still in the very, very beginning process of developing that with Carlos. So that would be my recommendation, that we waited perhaps until February so that you can look at something that is more crystallized. Right now, it's just a lot of moving parts.
Would that be at a time to talk about adding additional personnel that would, for instance, monitor neighborhood recycling sites or do some of the kinds of things we've been talking about, do more work with the businesses so we can get more of them involved in the picking up of materials. And it's no question, but it needs more personnel. And there are a number of other items that could use more personnel too. Seems to me if we don't lobby for them, nobody else will. So, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure Carlos is asking for more help too, but
Well, I can certainly review the draft with you, and then we can take notes. And my understanding is that the committee can make a recommendation. So looking at the draft might help kickstart that recommendation that it sounds like you might like to make.
And that would be in February is a good time for that.
I would say, yes, if we could meet in February, towards the middle or end of February, I think we're going to have much better information. How about, could we have this discussion when we reconvene for the February meeting, and then we can set a time then we'll know how far along we are with the budget, and that way you're looking at numbers that are as close as we're. It's always hard to predict today what we're going to be doing, 12 months from now. But
Of
I
course.
think if we have a bit more time, there'll be something more substantive for you to review.
Okay.
Thank you. Also, it'd be nice if someone else would like to join. Margot and I, it really is quite a learning experience to just come and talk about finance. So just let Brittany know if you want to help out. All
Or
right.
even just come and learn and
And come and
ask
learn.
questions about how this is put together. And for instance, this issue of the personnel, if you want to take on these programs or enhance them, because we're seeing what's happening with the current level of personnel. I mean, they're doing the best they can. And if we want things improved, then we need to provide people to do that.
Yes. And I'm still learning.
We're all still learning.
We're all still learning, right? Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate your hard work. All right. Let's move on to item five. We did not have a subcommittee meeting because we didn't think anyone wanted to show up on New Year's Day. So I think that worked out okay, right? I think as far as the environmental engineering, we're kind of getting that with the waste diversion collections and education, sometimes in ESAC. But if any of you would want to jump in and get that subcommittee going again, go ahead and let Brittany know about that. Okay. All right. Let's move on to item six for future agenda item. So,
Neighborhood
Brittany.
recycling centers needs to come back.
Okay, so we'll be talking about that again. We're getting close to election time. Brittany, should we set that up for next month or March?
Next month.
Okay.
Annual report.
And also, it's that annual report time too. So we'll, hopefully get information from the subcommittee and try to work all that out again. It does get time consuming. So, I think we finally got got it together by March of last year. I think that's okay, right, Brittany? We don't have to have it
Yeah,
any.
No, that should be fine, and that's pretty standard or what we've done in practice previously.
Okay.
So let's start in February talking about it.
All right.
What's involved?
And okay. And then we'll have a waste diversion collections and education meeting too. So that'll help. All right. Anything else for future agenda items? All right. Item 7, call to the audience.
We don't seem to have anyone. I don't know what happened. Some people from the Savano, I sent them the link because they were interested in sitting in on this meeting, and I don't know
If
if it
anyone.
needed to have anybody knocking at your portal door to let in or what happened, anything
Nope, I
around.
have no one in the waiting room and
No one in the waiting room. Okay. Well, they maybe got scared off or changed their mind or something.
we're not that scary. All right. And so that leads us to item 8, adjournment at 5:15. So thank you everyone for showing up. Anybody that wants to think about being chair, just let Brittany know and stay warm. Because it's
Yeah.
freezing outside. Jeez.
Yes.
Okay. See you.
Thanks,
Bye.
Chris.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
everybody. Take
Bye.
care.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Happy New
everyone.
Year to you
Bye.
all. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks.